Welcome to the Should've Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross, VSiN by the books. We'll go over the first round of the Masters, surprises, what to bet for day two, what to bet going forward, just takeaways from the round. And boy, ESPN just does everything they can to just annoy the average fan, just trying to watch their event, their product, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, Kendrick Perkins and Stephen A. Smith screaming on the morning shows. And then with the Masters, they've got Kevin Hart. They've got Kelce, who they just completely just jam down your throat every chance they get. All right, he was a good player. He was entertaining for a little bit. He is so, and it's not his fault because, you know, he's not doing anything. He's just so overexposed, oversaturated with Kelce. You know, the wrestler they throw in there, it's just, it's way, way too much. But that is just on brand for them. They have completely lost touch with their audience who just wants to watch the game, the event, whatever sport they're watching. They don't need all the extracurriculars. They have lost their way so much. It's ridiculous at this point. But McIlroy is coming off the championship, coming off his first ever Masters, tied for the lead with Burns. And I'll do most of this with Dave. And I will give Brad Thomas, who's on this podcast a lot, give him credit. You know, VSiN Primetimer was on one of his shows. I know he had Burns first round leader. So credit to him for hitting that, which, you know, if you bet that in that 60, 70 to 1 range, you get half of your payout. And McIlroy gets the other half, as those two are both 5 under after the first round. Scheffler played pretty well. Looked like for a while that maybe he would be in the mix there to be a first round leader. And, you know, it's tough when you're not in golf's not my best sport or favorite sport or the sport I have in terms of betting, like the betting knowledge or just knowledge in general. But when you're trying to figure out, all right, who should I bet? Who should I listen to? What show should I listen to? And the long shot guys do a great job. Matt Humans, we had on, does a great job. Felica, I mean, we got good guests on. The problem is when you don't know who to bet and you ask somebody, all right, who should I bet on? Or you listen to some of these shows to figure out who you want to bet on. They all give like 3, 4, 5 different guys, and you get people you trust. Once you multiply that by 4 or 5 guys you respect, and then 4 or 5 guys they all give out, it ends up, you know, you listen to enough of these shows, it's like every single guy gets picked, and it just pulls you in a million different directions in terms of, you know, who to pick. Rahm was a pretty popular pick too. He shot 6 over. He was terrible. No birdies. First time in his Masters career, no birdies. So we'll see what the weekend brings. A lot of guys on the leaderboard here that have won majors, so setting up to be a pretty good weekend here in Augusta, but we'll talk more of that with Dave. Before we get to him, just a couple of thoughts. NBA and baseball, mercifully, this NBA season will be over the next time we talk, Sunday into Monday, and we will wrap up the regular season. We'll finally get into the playing games, the playoffs. I've been saying for a few weeks, a couple months, we've done very little NBA. It should be as bad as the regular season become, and it has become the joke of all jokes. It's just every night it's blowouts, you know, games in the 270s, 280s. It's a rec league at this point. Playoffs should be pretty good. Now, it's not off to a great start because last year they had a million injuries. Curry got hurt against Minnesota, killed that series, completely killed Golden State. Not that they were winning the whole thing, but they were probably live against Minnesota. Minnesota loses the first game, but Curry got hurt, and then they win the next 4. Tatum got hurt. They might have lost that series anyway, but you get the idea. Halliburton gets hurt, Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Lillard got hurt. Maybe it would have mattered, maybe it didn't, but we've had a lot of star players in recent years get hurt in the playoffs, and they're already kind of off to a bad start. Embiid, who it's always something with Embiid. It is always something, and maybe some of it's bad luck. I think a lot of it is. You know, he breaks his face 3 or 4 years ago in a game he never should have been in against the Raptors. I think that was a Game 6, and they were up 3-0, and they almost had to play Game 7. But they essentially eliminated them. They eventually lose to the Heat, and that was a year, I think it was the year before the Heat went to the finals. That was that was the 23 year. That was Celtics Warriors that year. But he breaks his face. He's broken his hand. He's got appendicitis now, so he's going to be out for a couple weeks. We'll see if they can survive, what their play-in scenario is, and that kind of a jumbled mess between them, the Heat, the Magic, the Hornets. So you lose Embiid, and they already lost the Lakers, and the Lakers were not winning the championship. They probably were not getting the finals. They might not even gotten to the conference finals, but they were certainly live to win a round and maybe a second round. And you know, who knows, if they were the 3 seed, you get them versus the Nuggets in a first round, if that was the matchup. And I know the seedings are bunched up and the seedings have changed since. We're now Denver's up to the 3 seed. But you could have gotten a good first-round series with Luka versus whoever in the Lakers, and you still have LeBron in the mix. And then in the second round, maybe against the Spurs, where Spurs haven't been in the playoffs, they'll have probably an easier first-round matchup. Then they get to the second round, and you could add Luka versus Wemby in like a Game 7 for the chance to probably take on OKC. And who knows what, you know, how the seedings would have broken and all those things, but you already lose Luka. They are going to be, and maybe, and this is just a complete long shot, maybe they draw Houston and he can come back if they're able to win a couple games for a Game 5 or Game 6, but that is not even something that is worth discussing at this point. To me, they're going to get swept. Maybe they win a game in the first round, but they're basically done, and you lose the Laker brand, you lose the Luka brand, and Luka was playing great, and you lose LeBron all at once. And I know people are probably at this point sick of LeBron, but still not good for just the general interest, general enjoyment when you lose LeBron, Luka, and the Lakers all at once before the playoffs even start. So we'll see. The one betting aspect, and I'm excited for the playoffs, I'm excited even the play-in. The play-in, at least in the first couple days, you get those 7-8s. It's fun. The playoffs kind of underway. It's kind of a continuation of the playoffs. By the time you get to that Friday, once it's like the 9-10 winner, once it's the back end of the play-in and you're playing for that final spot, you're just kind of over it that third day because you play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then on Friday. So it's a lot of basketball. By the time you get to that Friday, it's like, all right, enough of this. I'm just kind of over this. Get me to the playoffs. But you have Curry in the mix in the play-in. The Hornets are a fun story. They're good. They can't seem to climb up and make any headway just in terms of catching these teams. But they're a fun team, a dangerous team. I think if they actually got in the main draw, the main bracket, they could give a team problems, sort of like the Pistons last year where they didn't beat the Knicks, but they could have. They were in all those games. They led late. They're very talented. Next year, they might be a 50-plus win team. They got a lot of young talent. Knipple's a tremendous player. And everything else they bring to the table. But the one betting aspect I would look at from the NBA right now, I talked about it a little bit on VSiN Primetime with Femi Ebenfe on Wednesday. My buddy Mike Manning brought this up. He had eyes on it. And I heard Bill Simmons talking about it. And look, he's a Boston guy, but he's also a voter, saying Mazzulla is the coach of the year. It's not close. Mannix, who's also a Boston guy, Chris Mannix, who does a bunch of media stuff, he mentioned he likes Mazzulla for coach of the year. He said a bunch of people he's talked to like Mazzulla coach of the year. I know Bickerstaff brought the Pistons to a one seed. It's a great story. But the Boston story is also very good, and these awards are all about stories and narratives. The Boston narrative is extremely strong. Where you lose Tatum, people thought it was a gap year. Maybe you just kind of tank and just get ready for next year, kind of a gap year. That was not the case. They are going to be in the playoffs. They might be going back to the finals, and they are right up there, you know, just behind Detroit. Mazzulla is plus 280 for coach of the year. I don't think that's a bad bet. I actually think it's a pretty good bet. I'm not saying it should be a toss-up. Maybe Bickerstaff should be favored, but I think it's much closer to a toss-up than that plus 280 price tag indicates. I wouldn't be surprised if Mazzulla won. I wouldn't be surprised if you get a very close vote. So to me, that is mispriced there at the plus 280. As far as baseball this weekend, and again, we wrap up the NBA mercifully on Sunday. We'll see what games matter. We'll see what games don't. Baseball, no huge takeaways. Yankees lost a couple games, just stopped hitting the last couple days. They've just, the bats have been flat. I still don't think this is a great team. It's a pretty good team, a playoff team. But to me, there's holes in the lineup. Chisholm has done nothing. And boy, him with challenges, him with, you know, fielding ground balls, he is, to me, just not my cup of tea as a player. But they played well for the most part. They've pitched well, even though spring shut them down on Thursday and they stopped hitting on Wednesday after they got a couple runs. But a lot of interleague games on Friday, and there's been a lot of interleague early in the season. You get Marlins and Tigers on Friday evening, Angels and Reds, Burns going. None of the props up yet. Burns under hits might be a good one, though. I don't know how many hits the Angels are getting off him. And Burns strikes out a million guys. He's a tremendous, tremendous young arm. Yankees play the Rays. Luis Gil making his first start of the season. He's been bad. He was bad in spring training, bad in the minors. I wouldn't trust him as a minus 150 price tag there. I would look towards taking the Rays probably plus a half a run in the first five. I think that could be a good play. The A's, who we mentioned, had a nice couple wins. They're staying in New York, so they've had the whole week in New York here. They will play the Mets Friday night. Holmes against JT Ginn. Mets and Holmes here, minus 155 favorites. Giants-Orioles, another interleague game. Orioles got off to a bad start. They've rebounded a little bit. But Guardians-Braves, another interleague game. So I'm not sure why we get so many interleague games. Red Sox-Cardinals, another interleague game. And then Rangers-Dodgers. It was actually kind of a fun one. The Rangers in L.A. to take the Dodgers. Glasnow, a minus 230 favorite over Kumar Rocker and the Rangers. who are in the plus 190 range. I miss when the interleague was different just because the rules used to be different. And you used to, when it first started, you'd have a couple weeks in June, then a couple weeks in July, and it was fun. It was special. It kind of break up the continuity of the season. Now it's just every day. It's opening day. It's early in the season. It's not as much fun as it used to be. It just, you don't even blink twice when you see these interleague matchups. It used to be something special. It used to be something different. And part of it was, you know, if you're an American League fan and you play a National League ballpark, your pitcher's hit, which is weird. And they're just the different rules, which I understand why they got the different rules, but got rid of the different rules. It didn't make sense to have two leagues and two separate rules, even though it was kind of fun and kind of unique. But nothing I'm dying to play here. I do think the Yankees look a little inflated here. You'd think they bounce back against the Rays and Mats, and Mats has bounced around. Boy, he was a big-time prospect for the Mets about a decade or so. He has been everywhere. Cardinals, Red Sox, he was with the Mets. He's been on a number of different teams here. He has turned into more of a journeyman, but back as a starter, he was more of a reliever last year with the Red Sox. But I don't trust Heel. Heel, who won Rookie of the Year a couple years ago, he just doesn't miss bats. And you know, like I said, Mats has bounced around Blue Jays, Mets, Red Sox, Cardinals. He's been on a couple different teams here. I guess those four teams, but he walks a lot of guys. His command's not there. His velocity's been a little bit down. He's older than you think because you think, oh, rookie, he's young. He's actually been he's 26, 27 years old. He's not as young as you might think, but I don't trust him with that price tag. So you get the Rays plus a half a run or so. To me, that would be a good bet in the first five innings. I think Heel could get touched up. Heel could give up some runs. Nothing I'm dying to play otherwise, but it's good to have baseball. Just back every day. I wish the schedule was a little more balanced. Thursday was a very light card. Wednesday is like all day games. And then by 6, 7 o'clock at night Eastern, all the games have started and nothing late. You do get a day game on Friday. The Cubbies, minus 150 favorites over Majinski and the Pirates in that series in Wrigley. So great time of year. Great time of year where baseball, basketball, football soon with the draft, everything kind of meets. And you got the Masters and before we know it, we will have the NBA and NHL playoffs underway. So fun time of the year with all this stuff going, even though the weather here in the East is it's spotty. One day it's pretty warm. The next day it's freezing. I guess next week the temperatures are supposed to rise where you're supposed to get some days in the 70s, the 80s, which will be good. And matters obviously for the props and just guys just have a hard time hitting in the cold weather too. You see that a lot where the Yankees had one hit on Thursday and the A's – I saw Kurtz, who's just a monster player, monster offensive player. He has not hit a home run yet. So you get these weird things early in the season, and the weather can certainly be a contributing factor to that. But Masters, baseball, maybe we'll talk some NFL draft. I got mentioned NFL draft this is just very little buzz, only a few weeks away from that. But it's been just very quiet from just a juice standpoint in terms of the draft. But coming up, we will talk Masters. We'll talk some baseball with Dave Ross, VSiN by the Books. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. You can catch him, VSiN by the Books, mornings 7 to 10 Eastern, where he and Jensen Lewis do a fantastic job. And he joins us now, Dave Ross. Dave, round one of the Masters pretty much in the books here. How are you? How's it going, man?
It was going great until the big Swede decided to take off the rest of the afternoon, Will. So I was really enjoying my Thursday at Augusta National. I wore my green jacket to the show today. Was very pumped up to see the Swede go out there in my 19-1 ticket and then just throw it into the flames, burn it all up because he decided for four holes he was not going to play golf like a professional. It really was a great day overall, though. Like to see Scotty back up there, we didn't know with the baby watch here how he was going to do. Really good, solid day one. I got to be honest, I said this on the show too, Will. You know, would we look back in this and go, man, I can't believe I didn't grab Rory at almost 13-1 before the week started because I did have concerns about his back and we hadn't seen Rory, fully healthy since the Players' Championship. The pressure of repeating, nobody's done that since Tiger Woods. And to see Rory go out there, the way he played, conversely, say from the way that as poorly as the Swede play, that's how well Rory played on that back nine coming home. And he looked like he's very comfortable. Feels like the weight of the world's been lifted off that guy. Tied for the lead at 5-under with your guy, Sam Burns. Nice first-round leader call by you. You got to like Rory's chances here possibly to go back-to-back for the first time since Tiger.
How do you finalize your card? Because I'm not a big golf guy. I'll just more listen to listen to VEASAN, listen to you guys, Long Shots, all different VEASAN podcasts. And it's funny. You listen to all these shows. You listen to one show, and somebody likes five different guys. Somebody else likes five different guys. And eventually, you can't bet 30, 35 different guys. How do you finalize it? Is it just your own work? Do you kind of aggregate people's opinions? How did you narrow your card in terms of like what you came up with?
Maybe this is part of the curse of being Italian, is I get so bullheaded in what I think is going to happen. And as much golf as I watch, and I consume a ton of it, I love golf. Well, I get to play it. I get to watch it. I get to watch the rounds in tournaments that people really don't care about either. And I watched Ludwig and I watched Robert McIntyre last week, and I thought, it's almost maybe a blessing in disguise they didn't win. It looked like one of those two guys was going to win last week, and they didn't, because there's kind of that weird thing if you don't win before the major, the weird superstitions of golf. It doesn't mean anything, but I think for the players sometimes they go, all right, I didn't fire all my bullets on the Valero Texas Open. And the way that Ludwig was hitting the ball, and I found one book that had 19-1 on the big sweeps, the best number that I found. And I guess long story short, Will, I'm going to find a number and a player that I think is in really good form. And Ludwig was in really good form coming in here. And again, he's not out of it seven shots back with three rounds to go, but disheartening the way he played the back nine. That's why I got to him at 19-1. Now, I have three outrights. Ludwig, two over par first day. I played Brooks Koepka. He bogeyed 18, which is a little bit disconcerting. But I played him at 66-1. And I felt like for a guy that's been runner up here twice, better form now that he's back in the PGA Tour, get a hot putter for maybe a weekend, and who knows the way he's striking the ball pretty darn well. I will say this, he's not out of it. Five shots back, traditionally, I think it's the last 10 Masters winners have come from at least, if not in the lead, but at least five shots back. That's the max. So he's right in that cut line. So I played him at 66-1. The third guy that I played, and the only other outright that I played, was Patrick Reed. And for the longest time, I got so excited when he was at 500 par making the turn that, hey, he maybe gets a little first-round leader. But he's right there at 300 par, two off the lead. And for a guy that's won a green jacket, playing so great around the world, multi-winner this year in the DP World Tour. And I know people don't put a lot of stock into some of that other stuff and other tours. I do. Winning is winning at this level with the DeChambeaus and the Reeds. And I don't care what tour, DP, LIV, or PGA Tour. And I know some people discount others. I really don't. Winning is winning. It's hard to do at the highest level here. Patrick Reed's won at the highest level. I think he's going to give me a fight all weekend at 43-1. So overall, it's, if I'm looking at a glass half full, I'd probably take this position with three outrights here with a loaded class field like you're going to get every year at Augusta. At least I got at least one guy in the fight and two guys on the fringe.
Where were you with Scheffler coming in? Obviously, new kid, new grip, hasn't been playing well. Made the tournament feel a little bit more wide open. Played well here for the most part. And he is down to plus 395. And I guess I'll just tee up with the odds here. No pun intended. Rory plus 215. Scheffler 4-1. Burns 10-1. Schauffele also 10-1. Reed 15-1. Rose 18-1. Day 21-1. And then you can kind of ask me or bring up anyone that I haven't mentioned. Your boy Ludwig is 60-1. Is there a play there? If I'm going in this, hey, I have no bets, I want some skin in the game, what is the best number available right now in terms of the outrights?
If you had nothing pre-tournament right now, I'd look at Xander Schauffele. And I'd say this is a guy that just 2 years ago was arguably, Will, the best player in the world. He won two majors in 1 year. He's staring down the biggest guns in, Scotty 2 years ago was untouchable. Well, he beat him twice in four majors. What kind of sample is that? The best sample. When you get four majors a year and you win two of them in 1 year. Last year he was hurt, came back at the rib issue and was kind of out of sorts for the majority of the year. Looks like he's back to playing not flamboyantly spectacular golf, but super solid. And what I think Xander and guys like that, and even Rory to a degree, they realize, well, they don't have to be flashy to win. Solid, their solid B+, A- game at that level, they'll be there every week in a major championship and kind of let the rest of the guys go for stuff they shouldn't go for. Steady wins the race sometimes. I'd look to Xander. I have nothing on him, by the way. I have no tickets on Xander Schauffele. I will be taking another look at him once the dust settles from round one. But I really like watching him today. His temperament, his golf swing, it all looks like if he's not back to being Xander, the two-time major champion, he's Xander 1.5 major champion. He's right there nipping at his old self. And that old self was as good as anybody in the game 2 years ago.
end of round two leader. So the leader here after round two, Rory's plus 160. Burns a little under 4-1. Scheffler a little under 9-1. Then you get Reed around 12-1. Day 14-1. Xander 16-1. Again, anyone else here interested, let me know. Is there a bet to be made in that market? Would you go with Scheffler, or is that asking for him to make up too much too soon?
Yeah, I probably would stay away from him in a second round leader play, because I think he's going to look at it and go, hey, if I do this for 4 days, well, the winning score might be in single digits. I know we got two guys at 500 right now. This course is playing very tough. So I'm looking at grinders. I'm looking at unspectacular. I don't need to go out there and try to reach 15-2 the way it's playing this week. Par is a pretty good score in that hole, which normally you try to make eagle or birdie. Now, hey, you make birdie, you're gaining ground on the field. That's how hard some of these par fives that traditionally play really easy, they're not so far. I don't know that the conditions are going to change a whole lot. Now, they can make them easier with pin placements. That's a way they can make this a little bit more risk-reward. Augusta likes to have that temptation on a back nine. That's why they say that the Augusta doesn't begin until the final round on Sunday in the back nine, because there is risk-reward there. But I think this year the risk, if you're smart, you mitigate that risk. You take less chances than you do. For a second-round leader play, if you push me to it, I'd look at Patrick Reed. There's another guy that loves hard golf courses, loves this golf course, has won here, talked about it after the round, and I heard him say, this thing's getting firm, it's getting fiery, and he's really good around these greens, and he knows that. The best players around the green want it tougher. I think that a guy like Patty Reed, and a guy like Xander Schauffele should thrive there too, but I don't think he's looking to put the foot down right away. Patrick Reed, I think if he goes out there and spins another 3-under, we'll see what Sam Burns does. I think 6-under tomorrow might be the leader.
Only four holes playing under par, all four par fives, pretty usual for the Masters. Course is nearly playing two strokes over. Faster, firmer, lack of rain in Augusta, all that stuff. And any of that stuff actionable when you look at the course? I know you just touched on it a little bit. Over-under winning score, I think it was 274.5 going in. I don't know, take it whatever direction you like.
Yeah, I think what you don't normally say is when a golf course is easier, it brings more players in, right? If it's a birdie machine, that's not where, you know, Scottie Scheffler, sure, he can make the birdies with the best of them. The best players want it hard. It's the hard that separates the real class players. So with all due respect to, you know, guys at even par that are, you know, Harris English, I think is around 1-under par, really good class players in the world. But if you don't have that elite world ranking skill set, I think it's going to separate you this week. So I will look to class players. Matter of fact, one of my favorite plays, and it was kind of almost a mini hedge, because I played at plus $1.60 that there would not be a new champion. That basically I'm picking anybody that's won this tournament before. That gives me Scottie Scheffler. That gives me Rory McIlroy. That gives me Patrick Reed. I really like my position with that bet right now, because I think it's going to take somebody with that course knowledge, somebody knows how to play this golf course when it gets tough, to win this thing again. So I'm not looking for a first-time winner this year, Will. I think it's going to be a usual suspect, whether it's Rory, Scottie, or Patrick Reed. Yeah, I like the guys that know it. They're not daunted by it. They're not going to take unnecessary risks there because they know where the trouble is. It's somebody like that that's going to steady, slowly win this race. And again, single digits at the end of – you told me right now I can take a clubhouse at 9-under, whatever golfer I am. I think they'd sign up for that 9-under and say, come catch me with that. They're not looking to go 12, 13-under as a lot of people were predicting the score to be. I don't think it's going to be that high.
Rahm was 9-1, 10-1 in some spots. First time in his Masters career, didn't record a single birdie in the round, I believe. What happened? What went wrong? Were you in on the Rahm hype? That was a guy you listened, you know, to all these shows. He was a very popular pick. What happened? What went wrong?
Everything went wrong, and he started off on the wrong foot early in his round, right? You get off to – one is a punch you in the face hole, too. It's not like a warm welcome. Hey, cozy up in the morning. Here's your first – first hole's tough. So if you can get out of there with a par or better, you really feel good about it. And so that's why I saw, like, Ludwig was 1-under through two. I was like, ooh, then 3-under through seven. All right. He got through that. Now you can really put the foot down. No, no, no. This golf course will punch you in the face, especially like Rahm did, giving off to a weak start. I did like him a week ago. As a matter of fact, I went on with Mike Palm, our buddy, on Bet on Chicago, and I kind of thought he should be the favorite. And then as the week got it to it, I didn't have any bets on him, and I pulled back when I heard him speak. And he seemed agitated at the press conference, being asked about some of the legal troubles with the DP World Tour. feels like he might not be part of the Ryder Cup team coming up in 2 years. That's something that he's so passionate about. He's suing the DP World Tour. He's in a really weird spot. And a lot of other people looked at the other way and said, oh, chip on his shoulder, something to prove. Here come. And I was like, I don't like his mental outlook for this thing. You need patience there. And that Spaniard can run hot. You saw it run hot today. I think a lot of the off the course stuff really affected him today. And it bled itself out there when he got off to a bad start. And once he starts going in the other direction, you see that old young John Rahm come out. Very spirited. And sometimes it's going to be very unnecessary chances that he takes. Watch out tomorrow. Rahmer knows I got to go, what, 4 under to probably think about making the cut. Well, that he could do that. He could very well do that and get back in this thing. Or it could really go badly because he's going to go for pins and fire at it, knowing that even par, he's going to be going home for the weekend no matter what.
Your thoughts on the coverage. ESPN, you know, Kelsey, Kevin Hart, the wrestler. A lot of people say, hey, I just want to watch golf. You're making me go all over the place for this first round. Just in general, your thoughts on the coverage is what?
Well, you know that stuff makes me chuckle when you can get America united against, say, Kevin Hart or against The Miz, the wrestler. You know, you pick your celebrity here, Jason Kelsey, right? We're just
– Jensen Lewis.
Right. It doesn't matter. Just enough of this guy, right? So Kelsey might be the best guy in the world. I'm sure he's a really nice guy. I don't need him in Augusta chewing down on every food. We get it. You're a big guy. You're a fat guy. You like to eat food. You played football. We get the bits up, dude. All right. So do football. We love you with that. I don't need you at Augusta National. So I got to tell you, I watched Prime. I watched Amazon Prime and their coverage. It was fantastic. It was none of that stuff. None of the ESPN stuff. None of the pomp and circumstance. And let me show you my celebrities and let me show you my Rolodex, who I can get on the phone and get here at Augusta. Did they have Peyton Manning on? I'm surprised if they didn't. None of that. So I watched golf over there. I could pick my holes. Did I want to watch Amen Corner? Guys coming through 10, 11, 12. Did I want to watch, they had feature holes, 15, 16, feature groups. Hey, I'm normally not a guy that champions streaming services. Certainly in our line of work too, when you're doing live betting, because it can always be behind a little bit. I got to tell you, man, it was accurate. It was clean. They didn't have unnecessary fluff like ESPN's going to give you sometimes. And I'm not trying to bang on ESPN, but they got to know their audience. This is not the time to do that at Augusta National. If you've got real golf fans, if you're trying to, their argument will be, well, we got you. We got the golf fan. Now we want the guy that's not the golf fan. That's why we're giving you Kevin Hart. We're giving you Jason Kelsey. We're giving you the Miz. Man, I don't think that's going to fly ultimately. Give me the golf. And if you don't like golf, that's okay. This doesn't have to be for you. Everything doesn't have to be for everybody. So I think that the pure golf fans out there that love Augusta National for how regal it is, for how historic it is, and really how you saw guys at the press conference tearing up like Gary Woodland about being back here and how much it means to them. I think fans that love the sport for that kind of go, why you give me the gimmicky stuff? You see how much it means to the players? Did you see Jack Nicklaus teeing off this morning in tears? That's how much this place means to these guys. They don't need it gimmicked up to try to get a new fan base.
And you hit the phrase, ESPN, knowing their audience, not something that their strength. They kind of lost the plot with that the last, I don't know, decade or so. It used to be a strength of theirs, no longer the case. Who wins the tournament?
I'm going to stick to my guns on Patty Reed. I really do think he was my favorite guy coming in at that price point at 43-1. And again, I wouldn't get mad at you.
Are you just sticking to your guns or you believe that? If I gave you True Serum, would you have the same answer?
You know, I don't think Rory's going to win, though. Like, I didn't think Rory was going to win. I changed my tune a little bit watching him. Still no tickets on him. Yeah. But something tells me, I mean, is he going to play that fast and easy in the back nine all 3 days? Something tells me he's still got one of those water balls coming, and I don't see Patrick Reed doing that. I don't see Patrick Reed doing what Ludvig Åberg did on the back nine today. I see tough as nails, gutty guy getting it around there. It's not going to be pretty. Low ball flights, not these majestic tee balls that we're watching from those guys I mentioned. Gets it around there, figures it out. I think he's going to be right there in the mix Sunday. If he's not on the first page of that leaderboard come Sunday, Will, I'll come back on your show and give an apology to anybody who bets him. I love him for a top five, if you want to look at that here very quickly, adjusted numbers live. I think Patrick Reed's going to be right there at the end of the day.
Rory plus 240. Boy, I know DraftKings doesn't do this. I think Circa does a good job of offering the yes-no. Would you lay a minus 280, minus 290 on no? Is that your cup of tea where you would lay no on some of these guys? I know it's counterintuitive, and most people listen to this and say, man, I don't want to leave $3 on anything, and you know what could go wrong, and all the things that could go wrong. But you know, a lot of pro bettors will lay the no price just because, hey, their numbers show value, whether it's lay $3 to win a dollar, lay $8 to win a dollar. I know people, I think it was Gil was talking about Rufus Peabody, who's a very sharp bettor, taking the no on Siwoo Kim, just like, hey, that no is too short, even though it's not fancy. It's, you know, $60 to win a buck when it should be 70 or vice versa. Do you ever get involved with that? That's just not your cup of tea.
It's normally not my cup of tea. I don't know that I would do it against Rory now. I would have done it yesterday. If you did give me that number yesterday, I would have taken it. And ironically, I'd be sweating bullets today if I did, right? Because I did not think he was that healthy. To me, I had ixnayed a couple guys right off the bat. Colin Morikawa, Jake Knapp, and Rory McIlroy, because I looked at their backs and I said, literally, their backs are, they're not healthy. So how are they going to get around this place? Well, two of those guys, Jake Knapp and Colin Morikawa, I don't think can win this tournament where they are over par after day one. Rory clearly is the exception. So I don't think he was playing possum either. I think he was really, really hurt. But, you know, he said he was fine coming in. It was interesting because even listening to him, Will, leading up to this in the Champions Dinner, I felt like he was so into, positively, everything else other than golf. I had no idea he'd go out there and shoot a 500 today. Maybe this new relaxed, I'm a made man, I'm wearing this green jacket for the rest of my life, Rory McIlroy really is now going to compete there every year. So I'd be a little bit surprised by that. If you made me bet right now somebody, I'd probably still take Scotty. If you made me play it to get a third green jacket out of the top fight guys, no disrespect to Sam Burns, I do think it's one of those repeat champions, but I'd rather play Patrick Reed as a repeat champion and Scotty Scheffler as a repeat champion at their prices versus Rory right now, that short, what'd you say, 245 number?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd want to get involved in that now.
Yeah, it's funny. Going back to it's been a couple of years now since we were doing those shows regularly co-hosting, where how many times did we go into a Saturday or a Sunday saying, Scheffler, maybe Scheffler? We talked about it, then we just kind of dismissed it. And, you know, the Chiefs and Mahomes, Hurley and UConn to some extent, and Scheffler, where it's some of these bets, you know, people just, they want to come up with the bet nobody else has, and it's just, yeah, there's nothing – there's nothing clever, there's nothing unique about saying, you know what, I'm going to take the Chiefs from Mahomes, or I'm going to take Hurley and UConn, or I'm going to take Scheffler. But sometimes those bets, it's just keep it simple with those things.
You know, one other name we haven't mentioned that we should, and mad respect, was he 45 years young, Justin Rose, putting together another great first round. I'm stunned he's not first round leader. He always seems to have the first round lead here. And again, I listen to these guys, Will, a lot, because I'm, like, as you well know, I'm immersed in the kind of the nerdiness of where they are mentally. I try to get inside their heads because I can see where their games are by watching them. And then I need to know mentally where they are. I loved everything I heard out of Justin Rose. I didn't play him, but I loved everything I heard out of him this week about you got to put yourself in the fight. You got to be willing to be hurt to be back in that mix. And I firmly believe that my game is good enough again this year to contend. And finally, things go my way and I get a break here and there, then maybe this year will be my year. He said three runners up. I'm thinking about that. He's lost in the playoff a couple of times. Had his heart broken last year against Rory. And he played so well even in that playoff hole. People forget that. It wasn't like he checked out. He had a birdie putt that somehow lipped out. So, like, he did almost everything you needed to do to win and still didn't win. I think mentally, he's putting himself right back into Sunday, right back in the fire. Do I think he can get across the line? Maybe not with those guys again, because I think he might be looking at some of the same names. So it could just be one of those snake-bitten things. But you should look at Rose right now, because I don't think he's going away. I think he'll be in the fight. Is he still good at this? Good enough at this age? Yeah, his game still is. But I think he needs more breaks than the other guys do.
Mets lead 1-0 as we're recording this Thursday evening. Luis Robert home run. Not a lot of power. I was high on the Mets. I think I picked Orioles over Mets or vice versa. I should probably know who I picked, but those are my two World Series teams. I'm a little concerned the lack of pop. That being said, they haven't had Soto here for a week or so. Are you okay with the Mets? You're usually optimistic. What's your state of the union here with the New York Metropolitans?
Well, because I played the Mets today and played them in the first five, I'm very happy with it right now. So the glass is half full since you told me Robert went yard. I'm nervy, as every Met fan is at this time. I'm in a group text called Meet the Mess, not the Meet the Mets. So it's a daily barrage of, you know, cancel the season. Soto is done. It's all over, right? That's kind of our gallows humor that we have as Met fans these days. The pitching's going to have to carry us. David Peterson's a problem right now. I mean, we do have some problems in the rotation that need to be addressed. But you got Nolan McClain in the bump today. I think we've all seen what he can do. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised by Senga at the beginning of the year, what we've seen out of him. I don't know that we can ever expect him to be a frontline guy, But with, you know, with Freddie Fastballs and with Nolan, you know, rowing with the new Nolan this time instead of the 69 Nolan Ryan, we've got enough, I think, at the top of the rotation to make us believers. I think the back end's going to be fine with your former Yankees there closing it out with Sugar Diaz in L.A. these days. So the question about the lineup's a good one. I think we need to survive the next 2.5 weeks without Soto. Hope that it's just a 3-week injury. Let's hope it's just that. Because if it's more than that, then you'll start to see the bats go, where's the pop? Where is it in this lineup? Are we good enough to manufacture runs? Hey, Vientos being back in there, he was a guy without a team. So now all of a sudden, Mark Vientos becomes a very important guy in that offense. We need Brett Beatty to swing the bat. We're going to need those guys that maybe we looked at as, you know, complementary pieces or just additions. If they did well, then that's bonuses. Now, instead of bonuses, they become almost necessities without a Juan Soto. So that you know, takes away that depth that you might have had. So those guys got to step up. Simeon's got to be better with the bat. We knew that would be a problem. It was more defense of an acquisition. But still need those guys at the bottom half of the lineup to turn it back over to the top. And if we do that with regularity, I think we'll be okay without Soto. But at some point, you got to hope he's healthy for the bulk of the rest of, what, 130 out of 162? If we can get that out of Soto, then I think we'll be just fine.
Anyone you've changed your mind on 2 weeks in where, I mean, I thought this team was going to be good and they're not, or vice versa?
Well, my portfolio after 2 weeks looks decent. Mets over at 86.5, good number that I really got there before the big trades came in. Royals are making me sweat it out a little bit more than I thought I'd have to sweat it out early this year. They were my one loss last year. I did play the A's, really rough start, but a couple wins in a row against New York. And I said this on the show this morning.
Good wins.
For a team that's a bad team right now, I think they're good. I think they're going to be okay. So do they have enough pitching? We'll find out about that. But I like my Pirates pick. That's looking really good so far. I think they're legit, and I think they're going to be for real. I have FOMO of not betting the Reds, as you probably have gathered at this point. You know how much I have an affinity for that team. No tickets on them this year. But I don't feel like I've missed on anybody yet. I hope the Royals turns out to be. That's a team I am invested in. Longer shots to win the pennant, get to the World Series. I really like their pitching. I need those bats to wake up. So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic, semi-disappointed early, but way too early for me to really turn my nose down to them so far.
Last one. Any draft bets? Can you remember a year where there was less buzz about the draft? I haven't gotten into it at all. I haven't really thought about it, haven't talked about it. I don't know if it's because we know Mendoza's going one.
Yeah.
It's not quarterback heavy. It seems like kind of a weak, watered-down draft. Maybe it's just me, but are you with me? Is there a lack of buzz for the draft? We're only a few weeks away. Would you agree with the take that it's kind of just not a lot of juice right now with the NFL draft?
Absolutely. There's no JU ice, as my buddy Tim Doyle would say. Where's the juice? Where's the JU ice? We don't have any. I think partially it is because Mendoza, because it's such a foregone conclusion in the betting markets that he's going one of the Raiders. You go out and get Kirk Cousins to be his mentor, and that's going to be the perfect mini-me for Kirk Cousins. So I think that's – we're already projecting what the Raiders' quarterback room is going to look like, and we haven't even got to the draft. You know what I mean? So it's so far down the road of progression by what the Raiders have done. So they can say, hey, you know, or listen in to calls or whatever they're going to say. All that stuff's done. So the draft starts at 2, and then you look at all those Ohio State guys – and it just feels like just go draft a defensive player from Ohio State, and that'll be somewhere between 2 through 12. You'll probably have 3 or 4 of those guys going right there in the mix. So because we don't have that splash, even this time last year, we talked about Genty a lot coming out of Boise State and how high would he go. And then, you know, the Raiders drafted him where they did last year. And I think we were excited because it's an offensive player. And because it's a really weak quarterback draft, we don't have buzz around multiple running backs that we go, boy, I'm just super jacked up like we were a year ago. Wide receivers, they'll go early, but is there anybody out there that you go, I got to have this guy on my team and he's going to turn our fortunes around? I really don't see it. So it feels because it's more defense and it's lack of a quarterback-driven class, we're just not getting that pomp and circumstance that we normally get this time of the year.
Dave, always fun, man. Good luck the rest of the tournament. Good luck to your Mets the rest of the evening. Where can our listeners catch your fine and brilliant content?
at D Ross Sports. It is fine and brilliant. And I love your tweets on there. I like when you get snarky. Because, like, people that when we get snarky on X, people think we're snarky. And I'm like, dude, you realize this is just a bit, right? This is just X. So that's what I like, if we can kind of pull the con job on people over there. Hey, we have some fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. And I will chastise my golfers publicly on X, like the Big Swede. So if you don't perform for me when I bet on you, I feel like their head coach will. I take them to task on social media because I know they're not seeing it.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Dave Ross. We will be back Monday. See you then.